Hello, Debbie again. On Wednesday, October 14th, at the Herald and Review, obituaries. Kuhn, Timothy S., Cisco. Timothy S. Kuhn, 45, of Cisco, passed away at 1:10 a.m. Monday, October 12th. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 Friday, October 16th, at the Mackey Wright Funeral Home in Monticello. A funeral mass will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, October 17th, at the St. Philomena Catholic Church, Monticello, with Father Bruce Lopez officiating. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the American Heart Association or the American Cancer Society. The family requests that casual attire be worn for services. Clinton, Fathery Woodrow Jr. Clinton, Woodrow Woody Fathery Jr., 79, of Clinton, Illinois, passed away at 9:08 a.m., October 10th, 2015, at Dr. John Warner Hospital, Clinton. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Friday, October 16th, at Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton, with Pastor Brian Fathery officiating. Private gravesides will be held Monday, October 19th, at Memorial Park Cemetery, Clinton. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 Thursday, October 15th, at the funeral home. Memorials may be directed to Woody Fathery Memorial Fund. Decatur, Gilman, Stephen Scott. Stephen Scott Gilman of Tampa, Florida, age 52, formerly of Decatur, went to be with his Savior on Saturday, October 10th, 2015. Steve was a wonderful son, brother, father, uncle, grandpa, great-grandpa, and great friend. He never knew a stranger and will be missed by all. Private services will be held in Tampa, Florida. Obituary written by family members. Arcola, Hirschberger, Rosalind P. Rosalind P. Hirschberger, 18, of Arcola, passed away on Sunday, October 11th, at the Summa Akron City Hospital in Akron, Ohio. Funeral services will be held at 9 a.m. on Thursday, October 15th, at Myron Hessler Residence, 191 North County Road, 525 East in Arcola. Bishop Jeffrey Allen Miller will officiate. Burial will be in Baghdad Cemetery in rural Arcola. Visitation will be held any time after 3 o'clock on Tuesday. These were held yesterday. This morning. After 10 a.m. on Wednesday, October 14th, at the Myron Hessler residence. Obituary written by family members. Shelbyville, Johnston, Lowell Eugene, Gene Johnston, 85, of Shelbyville, Illinois, died at 8:45 Monday, October 12th, in his home with his family. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 17th, in Howe and Yockey Funeral Home, Shelbyville, with Reverend Jeremy West officiating. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday and also from 10 to 11 on Saturday. Burial will be at Glenwood Cemetery, Shelbyville, with military rites by the Shelby County Honor Guard. Memorials may be given to the First United Methodist Church Food Pantry or Save Our Chautauqua. Decatur, Law, Jackie Law, 43, formerly of Decatur, Illinois, passed away on Saturday, October 10th, in Indianapolis. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 Friday, October 16th, with funeral service beginning at 7 p.m. at Brittlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur. Condolences may be left to the family in care of Brittlinger and Earl Funeral Home. Decatur, Mooney, Ramona Maxine Mooney, 83, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away Monday, October 12, 2015, at her residence. Funeral services will be at noon Thursday, October 15th, at Brittlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, with visitation 5 to 8 p.m. tonight, Wednesday, October 14th, at the funeral home. Burial will be in Camp Butler National Cemetery, Riverton, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the Alzheimer's Association. And the last of the obituaries in today's paper, Decatur, Van Fleet, Charlene Rose. Charlene Rose Van Fleet, 63, of Decatur, passed away Monday, October 12, 2015, in her home with her family by her side. The family will receive friends for a visitation on Thursday, October 15th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Services with flight home ceremony to celebrate her life will be 11 a.m. Friday, October 16th, at the funeral home, Pastor Nick Harden officiating. Burial will follow in Harper Ferry Cemetery, Palmer, Illinois. Memorials may be made to Homeward Bound Pet Shelter. The family of Charlene Rose Van Fleet is being served by the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home on Oakland Avenue in Decatur. Condolences and memories may be shared at their website. That is the end of the death notices listed in the Herald and Review for Wednesday, October 14, 2015. Back to the news. Rauner wants Thompson Center sold. This is by Kurt Erickson, the Herald and Review Springfield Bureau Chief. Springfield, taking a page from former Governor Rod Blagojevich's playbook, Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner wants to sell the state's main office building in Chicago. The Republican businessman said auctioning the dilapidated and oft-criticized James R. Thompson Center would bring an influx of cash and provide savings in the future. We think this is a home-run decision in every regard, said Rauner during a news conference in the atrium of the building Tuesday. It remains unclear, however, whether such a move could go forward. In 2004, the now-in-prison Blagojevich proposed selling the 16-story building and leasing back the space for state offices. A second proposal to mortgage the facility to help prop up an ailing state budget fizzled after Attorney General Lisa Madigan declared it was unconstitutional. Rauner also would have to follow a state law regarding the disposal of state property, including emptying the building, having it declared unused, and offering it up to other units of government before it can be auctioned. In the case of the Blagojevich proposal, the Attorney General concluded that borrowing against the value of the building would result in the creation of new state debt. That meant the plan would need support from three-fifths of the members in House and Senate, a threshold Blagojevich deemed too high to pursue further. 2 years later, Madigan also blocked Blagojevich from selling the state's student loan portfolio, saying it, too, needed approval from the General Assembly. Madigan's office did not immediately respond to questions about the governor's plan. Former Attorney General Jim Ryan, a Republican like Rauner, threatened to block a settlement that would have allowed the sale of an unused casino license. Rauner, who acknowledged Tuesday that his plan will need legislative approval, has disclosed the plan with legislative leaders. Senate President John Cullerton and House Speaker Michael Madigan, both Chicago Democrats, didn't immediately rule out a sale. We will review the details in light of laws regarding state real estate and facility closure procedures, said Cullerton spokeswoman Rakesha Phelan. Democrats voted in favor of the 2004 sale under Blagojevich. Most Republicans voted no. Senate Minority Leader Christine Murdaugno, Republican Lamont, was among those who turned a thumbs down on Blagojevich's proposal, but now is now backing Rauner's. The taxpayers need to come first, and today's announcement puts action into those words, Murdaugno said in a statement posted on her Facebook account. Selling the Thompson Center will allow the state to explore options for managing employees in the city and suburbs and best manage our tax dollars in a time of extreme budget stress. The building is no longer functional for state government. State Senator Bill Brady, Republican Bloomington, who is a commercial and residential real estate developer, said he supports the plan despite having opposed Blagojevich's version 11 years ago. I think there's a different trust factor in times of change. It certainly seems a lot better time to go to the market, Brady said. State Representative Bill Mitchell, Republican Forsyth, also supports the sale. He previously served as a property manager under former Jim Edgar and said the building is not suitable as a state-owned facility. Along with high utility bills, he said it has a lot of wasted space. The building from its inception probably wasn't a good deal for the taxpayers, Mitchell said. In his announcement, Rauner said the building has become a liability for the state. It opened in 1985, but it has not been maintained. The last major sale of state-owned real estate happened under former Governor Pat Quinn, who helped orchestrate the $165 million sale of a new but unused prison in Thompson to the federal government. That is the end of that article. And the last item from the news section in the Decatur Herald and Review by Christine Maiduk from the Los Angeles Times. This is why we still have Columbus Day. Every fall in recent memory has reignited the ongoing hand-wringing over the landing of Christopher Columbus in the New World and the legacy his, quote, discovery, unquote, left us. For decades, the U.S. has celebrated the second Monday of October as a federal holiday, an annual reaffirmation by the American people of their faith in the future, a declaration of willingness to face with confidence the imponderables of unknown tomorrows, according to a Senate report from the year Congress made Columbus Day a federal affair. Native American activists, among others, see Columbus as a European colonizer who set in motion the genocide of an entire people. But the reasons we still have the holiday in his name are pretty straightforward. 1. Columbus Day was Italian Americans' idea, and many of them want to keep it. After strong lobbying from the Knights of Columbus, a Catholic service organization consisting largely of Italian Americans, President Franklin D. Roosevelt proclaimed October 12, 1937 as the first Columbus Day and directed that flags be displayed on all government buildings on that date, according to a front page item in the Los Angeles Times that September. Each recurrence of Columbus Day brings to all of us a greater appreciation of the heritage we have received as a result of the faith and courage and fortitude of the Genesee's navigator and his brave companions, Roosevelt said, to mark the occasion the next year. Congress passed the Monday holiday law in 1968, establishing the three-day weekend for some federal holidays and adding Columbus Day as an official public holiday. By then, 45 states were already observing it. Since then, efforts to eliminate or rename the Columbus Day holiday in various states and cities have met strong resistance from Italian Americans who have said Columbus is an important figure in their heritage and calling such efforts as anti-Italian American. When Montana State Senator Don Ryan tried to swap the state's Columbus Day holiday in favor of a September 11th holiday to avoid the increased cost of an extra paid holiday, Italian Americans spoke out against the bill, and it was voted down, he told the Los Angeles Times in 2009. Next, it would take an act of Congress to scrap the federal holiday, and it doesn't look like anyone's even tried. Since Congress enshrined the day as a public holiday in 1968, it would take another act of Congress to eliminate it. And in search of bills going back to 1973, it doesn't appear any have been introduced. There have been resolutions introduced, however, expressing support for students to learn about Christopher Columbus and proclaiming Christopher Columbus to be an honorary citizen of the U.S. Another measure, which passed both houses in 1992, expressed support for the planting of 500 California redwood trees in Spain to commemorate the 500th anniversary of the voyage. Robert Holden, Deputy Director of the National Congress of American Indians, said that although the idea has been brewing in the Native American community for years, there's been no political will to introduce such a measure. The organization has lobbied, however, for establishing November as Native American Heritage Month and other forms of recognition. Finally, we want to put some accuracy in history and acknowledge that we were here and that we're still here, said Holden, who's of Choctaw and Chickasaw descent. Another point, alternatives exist, but millions of people still go to Columbus Day parades. In 1992, the city of Berkeley was the first to declare the day Indigenous Peoples Day. Last year, Seattle and Minneapolis followed suit, and this year, Albuquerque, Portland, Oregon, St. Paul, Minnesota, and Olympia, Washington did too. 22 states, including California, do not consider it a paid holiday. South Dakota celebrates North American Day instead, and Hawaii and Alaska, which also have large Native populations, don't recognize it at all. In polls going back to 2007, very few Americans have said they believe Columbus Day is one of the nation's most important holidays. In 2014, 45% of those surveyed by Rasmussen said they consider it one of the least important. Even so, according to a 2013 poll, 58% of Americans still think America should honor the Italian explorer. And New York City's Columbus Day Parade is one of the city's biggest public gatherings of the year. This year it was expected to draw more than 1 million spectators. End of the article on Columbus Day. End of the news section for the Herald and Review. A quick foray to the sports page for the high school. Second down, Cardinals Lewis set state record. Warrensburg-Lathan's offense has been among the most dangerous in the area all season, averaging 36.8 points going into Friday's game against Clinton. But the Cardinals' 58-point performance against the Maroons was on another level. Deontay Lewis set a state record with his 364 yards receiving, surpassing Lombard Montini's Jordan Westerkamp, who had 353 in 2011, and Monticello's Noah Freeman, who had 348 last year. Also, quarterback Jacob Napier's 474 yards passing was the third most in Herald and Review area history, behind only Monticello's Brandon Wildman, 602 last year, and Mattoon's Jared Pilsen, 514 in 2000. We saw some things on film. We thought we could get singled up in coverage, and that's a matchup favorable for our guys, Warrensburg coach Scott Godfrey said. They came out like we thought with some one-on-ones, and our guys got open. End of that article. Continuing with more Decatur news, this comes from the Decatur Tribune officers and Paul Osborne. It has a headline, a big, big congratulations to all involved in the 14th annual WSOY Community Food Drive that set a new record of $1,275,080. Then an article, Downtown's Faded, Looking for Lincoln Storyboards Replaced. A few months ago, I mentioned in this column the bad condition of some of the downtown Looking for Lincoln signs and how they should be replaced. I also mentioned that many years after its dedication, Preston Jackson's African-American Civil War Soldiers Monument still had no signage identifying it. I received assurances from both City Manager Tim Gleason and Assistant City Manager Billy Tuyos that the problem would be addressed very soon. I assured those who asked me about the statue and the faded signage that something would be done because both Gleason and Tuyos had given me their word on the matter. Ooh. Now they have kept their word, and I'm really pleased. I received a message from Tyus with an update on both items that concern me and others. He wrote, all the Looking for Lincoln signs have been installed downtown, leaving just one near the Milliken Homestead. We hired a contractor to install the downtown storyboards, but the final sign will be installed soon by staff and reps from the Decatur Area Convention and Visitors Bureau. Also, we have ordered the plaque for the African-American Civil War Soldiers Monument from C&K Custom Signs, and they estimate installation could take place within the next 2 to 3 weeks. We will also be doing a larger, more descriptive sign on the site with more of a narrative and potentially pictures, but wanted to get the plaque in first. That's great news, and a lot of us say thanks for the for following through and getting the work done. Continuing with his column, congrats, my Thursday morning radio buddy and longtime friend Brian Byers of WSOY AM Decatur was named Small Market Personality of the Year at the 2015 National Association of Broadcasters Marconi Radio Awards. The awards were announced Thursday night at the 26th annual NAB Marconi Radio Awards dinner and show held during the radio show in Atlanta, Georgia. The prestigious awards recognize radio's outstanding personalities and stations. Marconi finalists were selected by a task force of broadcasters, and the winners were voted on by the NAB Marconi Radio Awards Selection Academy. The votes were tabulated by an independent firm. Congratulations to Brian and his many efforts for the Decatur area over the years, both on and off the radio. I always enjoyed our weekly one-hour City Hall Insiders chats on Byers and Company over the past 12 years. Next, I enjoyed getting to know more about Associate Circuit Judge Thomas C. Little last week as we chatted about his candidacy for the Macon County Circuit Judge. Judge Little will be running in the March 2016 primary as a candidate of the Republican Party to fill the vacancy created by Judge Timothy Stedman's retirement. So far, Judge Little is the only announced candidate for the position. Food Drive. The 14th annual WSOY Community Food Drive will be held on Friday, October 9th. Okay, so they've already held that, and that was that success that we said. Tinted. A few weeks ago in this column, I mentioned how some vehicles' windows are so heavily tinted that I couldn't see anything inside. I see that more often. In my mind, it certainly poses a safety hazard for any law enforcement officer who stops a vehicle with heavily tinted windows. I felt that such heavy tints should be illegal. One of our readers informed me that the General Assembly passed legislation some time ago that permits heavily tinted windows. I did check legislative records, and apparently car window tinting laws have been in effect for years and revised not that long ago. Like most legislation, it will make you dizzy and tint your senses by the time you finish reading it. It lists a lot of categories of tint and reflective glass. Apparently, a tint must at least allow 35% of light to come through the window. I don't know about the percentage of light in some of the vehicles I've been seeing, but if legislators approve window tints that make it impossible to see in the car, they need to have an MRI to see if there's any brain waves present. These heavy tints are dangerous, period. And in an environment where police officers are being targeted, it's crazy to allow drivers that kind of visual protection. I'm not contending that all tints should be banned, just the ones that endanger the lives of law enforcement because they can't see inside the vehicle. So that's the end of his column for today's. Local news. City Councilman McDaniel issues memo stating he will vote against rezoning Ash Avenue and Route 51 for new Aldi store. City Councilman Pat McDaniel issued a memo tonight, October 8th, stating he will vote no, and this is in the October 15th paper here, that he will vote no to rezoning Ash Avenue, Route 51, so Aldi can build a new store at that location. The City Council is scheduled to discuss the rezoning issue and possibly vote on it at the October 19th Council meeting. McDaniel is the first councilman to publicly announce how he will vote on the petition to rezone. Most residents who have been watching the neighbors of the area protest against the rezoning are not sure how the vote will go. Following is the memo from McDaniel. It was sent from the Decatur Tribune this evening. As a member of the Decatur City Council, it is my responsibility, along with other members of the council, to promote and foster further responsible community economic development growth. But it is also my responsibility as a council member to protect the quality of life and public safety elements within our community that Decatur residents count on. Over 10 years ago and into the present time, Decatur City Council members have made the protection and improvements of our city neighborhoods one of the five top priority goals of the council, and supporting the proposed rezoning petition for the Ash Avenue and Route 51 area, in my opinion, goes totally against the council's pledge to protect and improve city neighborhoods, as well as the quality of life issue and the neighborhood safety factor for the residents of the Windsor Village, other areas around the proposed development area, and for other community residents and out-of-town visitors who travel in the area. The members of the Decatur City Council and city staff for years have been studying how to make the main corridors leading into our community more attractive and welcoming, and the proposed rezoning of the Ash Avenue Route 51 location would certainly go against years of city government planning and in improving one of the city's main corridor entrances into the Decatur community. Taking a hard look at all the factors that I have mentioned, I have decided to cast a no vote on the petition request to rezone the area of Ash Avenue and Route 51 when the issue comes before the Decatur City Council. Next, council appoints new member, approves sewer plan. Oh, I think we read that. The Decatur City Council once again has a full complement of members following action Monday night with one of its first orders of business to approve the next steps to address sewer backup. So they appointed Chris Funk. So that's the end of that section on City Council. Actually, here's some more City Council. City Council receives proposed hotel development. The Decatur City Council on Monday agreed to receive and file an agreement that, if approved, could help facilitate the development of a new 80-room hotel on the city's east side. The agreement with Evergreen Hospitality LLC would call for the city to share 50% of the current hotel's use tax for 5 years from a New Hampton Inn hotel being considered for the now-vacant parcel at 2225 South Mount Zion Road in Decatur. The developer would invest more than $7 million in the development, with the goal being to begin construction yet this year of all pending approvals, if all pending approvals can be obtained. The project is expected to provide local construction jobs for approximately 110 tradespeople over the construction period of 6 to 9 months, and the hotel is expected to support 30 full-time equivalent employees once open. It's anticipated that an additional hotel in this location will create a hotel cluster, which will attract additional visitors to the area, providing benefits to retailers and restaurants. In many instances, the city receives and files agreements in advance of a formal vote to allow for review prior to official action. The Decatur City Council will formally consider the agreement at the October 19th meeting. Next, Salvation Army names Brad and Brigide Sweeney as Tree of Light's honorary co-chairs. Brad and Brigide Sweeney as Tree of Light's honorary co-chairs for 2015. The Salvation Army has announced that Decatur Police Chief Brad and his wife Brigide Sweeney will be this year's honorary Tree of Light's co-chair. Having the support of these two fine people will help us tremendously in our largest and very important campaign, said Major Wes Dahlberg, Corps Officer of the Salvation Army. Chief Sweeney said, "This is the 127th year the Salvation Army has served Decatur and Macon County, and for the 117th time, we will start the very familiar sound of our bells ringing around Decatur. The money raised from the Tree of Lights campaign supports every program the Salvation Army offers the residents of Decatur and Macon County. We thank the Macon County residents for being so supportive of us. Without their generosity, we would not be able to assist anyone," said Dahlberg, added Dahlberg. Brad and Bridget Sweeney are longtime residents of Decatur. Brad's been a member of the Decatur Police Force for over 20 years and was recently named Chief of Police for the city of Decatur. Brigide is a teacher's aide for the Holy Family School. The Sweeneys have three children, Sam, Sydney, and Joey. The Salvation Army's Tree of Light campaign starts on November 5th and will run until December 24th. The Salvation Army kettles will be out and bell ringers will be ringing starting on Friday, November 6th at 10 a.m. Our bell ringers will be ringing from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday. We have several individuals and groups signed up to volunteer to ring for us, but we could use many more, said Dave McDonough, Director of Development and Communication. It's easy to volunteer. Go to our website. That will take you to our volunteer site where you can choose the day, time, and location of where you'd like to ring for us. Donations of checks and cash may be placed in any of the kettles, mailed to the Salvation Army at Post Office Box 836 Decatur, Illinois, or a credit or debit card donation through their website. End of the article. Reading from Mac on Sports, J. Thomas McNamara, sports editor for the Decatur Tribune. This is the end of his article on Grosch likes depth and versatility. Beginning his fourth season as Illini men's basketball head coach, Grosch said that his team's depth and versatility will allow him to do more things than he's been able to do in his first three. In addition to citing the team's depth and versatility, he also mentioned the team's character, their love for each other and playing for each other, serving we expect them to serve, caring for each other is another, and then accepting each other. I will have more on this developing story in a future print edition of the Decatur Tribune. This is the end of the Decatur Tribune section and also end of part two for the Decatur News for Wednesday, October 14th, 2015. This is Debbie saying, talk to you again next week.